1948, of resettling them again into Egypt. In the mid-1950s, the UN devised a plan for this kind of mass resettlement, and it was met with a popular outrage in Gaza and kind
we
of crushed in a popular uprising. So, I mean, these kinds of plans are longstanding, and there's a real fear that they will be realized. But for now, we have to see Egypt is rejecting it, but Israel's creating a situation where life is becoming unlivable in Gaza.
Sherif Abdelkaddous, independent journalist working with the Egyptian news outlet Matamasser, produced the award-winning documentary The Killing of Shireen Abu Akleh about the Palestinian-American journalist. We will link to your piece in The Guardian. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You are tuned into KBO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Tune in to Higher Reasoning Reggae every Sunday morning at 3 a.m. Higher Reasoning Reggae is dedicated to bringing international reggae word and sound power to the massive airing early Sunday mornings at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Portland.
KBOO's fall membership is almost over. We invite you to become a member right now by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Contribute during this last week of the drive and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $14,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of donors. Hurry and join the KBOO family today and help us meet our $55,000 goal at kboo.fm/give. Together, we can do it. If you get cold, yeah, I will be your cover. Don't have to worry, cause I'm here.
Don't need something. And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, a cold snap and the first frost head toward the Pacific Northwest this week. Republican House Majority Leader Tom Emmer is out of the race for House Speaker with no clear alternative, and information about an organization teaching high schoolers financial literacy skills. For Tuesday, October 24th, 2023. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Michelle Coppola. There's not just rain in the forecast for the Northwest this week. There's also the first real taste of fall and wintry weather. A cold front is bringing temperatures down with rain in the Willamette Valley and snow in the mountains, both in Oregon and in Washington. Snow is expected at elevations above 2,500 feet, and it's expected to accumulate at elevations above 3,500 feet. That includes Oregon and Washington's tallest peaks and their mountain passes as well. Portland will likely see its first round of frost this weekend, and afternoon temperatures aren't expected to start rebounding until the middle of next week. Rain accumulation will climb as we go through the rest of the week, slowing some by Friday. On to Washington, D.C., where the attempts to elect a Speaker of the House continue. Republican Majority Whip Representative Tom Emmer has dropped from the race to become Speaker now, just hours after being nominated. He's the third nominee to fail to get enough support to lead the chamber after far-right members of the party ousted former Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Emmer emerged as a pick in a secret ballot this morning, but more than 20 Republican reps said they wouldn't support him, which is enough to keep him from the speakership. He needs 217 votes to become speaker, and the Republican majority is narrow, so any speaker candidate can only afford to lose a handful of votes. Former President Trump took to Truth Social to call Emmer a rhino, Republican in name only, who, quote, never respected the power of a Trump endorsement or the breadth and scope of MAGA. The House of Representatives has been without a speaker since October 3rd, and they're in a race against time. The budget extension they passed only lasts until November 17th. If they don't reconvene the House and pass another budget or extension by then, the government will shut down. October is Financial Planning Month, and students are getting a taste of how to manage their money with Bite of Reality fairs. The fairs provide real-world budgeting exercises. Eric Tegedoff has more.
October is Financial Planning Month, and an engaging event is helping high schoolers think about their money-managing futures. More than 90 Bite of Reality fairs have reached 9,000 students across the West, including in Oregon. Sarah Bay is with the Go West Foundation, an organization that works with credit unions in the region and sponsors the fairs. During the events, Bay says each student is assigned a persona.
That persona includes an occupation, income, family description, any possible debt that they might have, including student loans, for example. And students visit 9 different merchant booths to make financial decisions about housing, transportation, groceries, childcare, dining, and so forth.
Bay says students complete a 90-minute budgeting exercise to give them a realistic look at how to adjust their finances. She says students have provided feedback on how thankful they are to get this kind of experience, which is hard to find in the real world.
Another said it's very difficult to budget when you don't try to plan it out. Just winging it doesn't work.
Bay says this experience can have lasting impacts. Moreover, she notes money management is a useful tool for people of any age.
Financial planning and capability skills are really muscles that we have to use. We can read about the information, but until we apply it and have real life experience with it, it's challenging to fully understand how it works.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
There's now more information about the Alaska Airlines pilot who attempted to shut down the engines of a San Francisco-bound flight on Sunday night. That flight, which originated in Everett, Washington, had to make an emergency landing at PDX. KGW reports that 44-year-old Joseph Emerson has now admitted that he took magic mushrooms before boarding the flight. Emerson also told authorities he thought he was having a nervous breakdown and hadn't slept in 40 hours prior to the incident. According to a federal affidavit, Emerson was riding in the cockpit jump seat when he attempted to activate the fire suppression systems in both engines, which would have caused them to shut down. The plane's two pilots were able to prevent Emerson from doing so and removed him from the cockpit. He was arrested after the flight landed in Portland and has now been charged with 83 counts of attempted murder. He made his first court appearance this afternoon. President Biden says no discussion of a ceasefire until Hamas hostages are released. House Republicans are back to the drawing board in their search for a speaker, and the UAW expands its strike to a huge Stellantis plant in Detroit. With more on those stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
There are a few relevant military officers with experience, the kinds of experience that we believe is appropriate to sorts of operations that Israel is conducting and may conduct in the future.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says the White House has authorized military officers to travel to Israel and to share their perspectives. Israel has delayed expected ground operations in Gaza, but still seems poised. The death toll continues to rise. More than 1,400 Israelis and 5,000 Palestinians have been killed. Michigan progressive Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib is calling on President Joe Biden to seek a ceasefire.
President Biden, not all of America's with you on this one. And you need to wake up and understand that.
During a tech event Monday, Biden said he would be willing to consider a ceasefire if Hamas releases the 200 hostages it holds. More than 10 Americans still remain unaccounted for. House Republicans have scheduled a vote on their next speaker nominee today, although that timing may slip. Former Florida Republican Representative David Jolly told MSNBC that Majority Whip Tom Emmer of Minnesota is the likely frontrunner.
Tom Emmer would be the natural pick in a moment where everything has collapsed and you just reach for a consensus candidate.
Emmer does face opposition from former President Donald Trump, but it's far from clear how important that is. The House is heading into a third week without a speaker after two nominees failed to get the near-perfect GOP support they would need. One of the 9 candidates who's closer to the former president, Brian Donald of Florida, says the vote must be member-driven, not based on who wants to advance.
We need to get back to work, secure our border, fund our government responsibly, and hold this administration accountable.
Over the weekend, former Wyoming Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney said she's not ruling out a White House bid. During the interview with CNN, Cheney says she believes Trump is the single most dangerous threat to the country, and she'll work for candidates who'll safeguard democracy.
We don't want a situation where the election is thrown into the House of Representatives and Donald Trump has any possibility at all of prevailing under those circumstances.
Senator Bob Menendez pleaded not guilty to a federal charge that he acted as an unregistered agent of Egypt while serving as chair of Senate Foreign Relations. Menendez had a brief interaction with reporters going into court Monday.
How are you feeling today?
Will you make a statement?
How are you feeling today? Good?
I'm all right. Okay.
This is Menendez's second not guilty plea in a month. He and his wife are accused of extensive corruption. Finally, the United Auto Workers are expanding their six-week strike, calling on nearly 7,000 members to walk out of a Detroit Stellantis plant. The UAW accuses Stellantis of falling short compared to proposals from Ford and General Motors. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Well, it's just over a week until Halloween, and regardless of whether you have your costume ready or not, Halloween provides an opportunity for families to engage in social activities with other people in their community. The holiday can also help parents and kids foster healthy, positive relationships with each other and those around them. For more, here's Eric Tegedoff.
Halloween is coming up, and for kids and parents, the holiday provides an opportunity to connect with their community. Kim Hemmert with the Idaho Children's Trust Fund says Halloween is a social holiday and provides many ways for families to strengthen their relationships with the people around them.
Whether it's with trunk-or-treat events, whether it's in communities where they put on trick-or-treating events in the neighborhood, it's a great time for families to engage with their neighbors and with their community and to make those social connections.
Hemmert says her organization promotes the Healthy Outcomes from Positive Experiences, or HOPE, framework, which can help combat negative experiences in children's lives. She says the four building blocks for the HOPE framework are healthy relationships, social and civic engagement, safe and equitable environments, and emotional growth. Hemmert says kids might be scared on Halloween, but this can also be a chance for emotional growth. She says parents can help their children process distressing emotions.
Talk about those emotions if they see something scary or if they feel something scary, to identify what that feels like, what that looks like, and for the parent to help co-regulate with that child to come back to a state where everyone is calm and regulated.
Hemmert says the holiday also is an opportunity for parents to help their kids identify other feelings, such as anxiety about engaging in social situations. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $55,000 by the end of October. It's our last week, and we cannot do it without you. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Totality of Circumstances with Sam Bowman and Jasmine Moneymaker. At 6, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, For the Wild. Your weather forecast will be rainy with a low of 47 degrees tonight, and tomorrow also more rain with a high of only 49. Today in history, in 1964, Northern Rhodesia gains its independence from the UK, renaming itself Zambia. The quote of the day is from American actor Leslie Jordan, who died on this day in 2022. He said, quote, "I think our dreams are what sustain us in hard times. Dreams are what keep us childlike. I love that they can grow and expand as we grow and expand." Just in time for the Halloween season, it is Bat Week, and advocates for endangered species say the time to protect bats and learn about their benefits is now. As Farah Siddiqui reports, a North Carolina National Forest Management Plan might be falling short of protections provided by the Endangered Species Act, but advocates are urging the government to do more.
As Halloween approaches and thoughts may turn to spooky bat costumes, advocates for endangered species emphasize that bats are not creatures to fear. Bat Week is underway, and wildlife advocates in North Carolina are urging residents to learn about these enigmatic creatures and the advantages they provide. Ben Prater with Defenders of Wildlife says bats contribute $50 billion in natural pest control, and a new management plan may not adequately safeguard their critically important ecological role.
Bats get a bad rap. You know, they're a source of myth and legend and things that aren't best to help endear these animals to us. Bats play a critically important role in our ecosystems. People can enjoy at dusk knowing that bats are working hard to reduce pests and insects and keep our ecosystems healthy.
Prater emphasizes the significance of the U.S. Forest Service and Fish and Wildlife Service in ensuring that the Management Act allocates resources with the specificity and detail needed for the recovery and maintenance of the diverse bat species in the Nantahala and Pisgah National Forests. Prater says bats have suffered because of white nose syndrome, a lethal fungal disease that affects them during hibernation. He recommends that individuals try to minimize the use of pesticides and insecticides in their backyards to assist in the conservation of wildlife, as these substances can be harmful to a wide range of species.
I recommend that folks embrace getting a little bit messy, allowing shrubby areas to persist. If a tree comes down, allowing that habitat to remain. Many of those features that may not look desirable to us are critically important for bats and other wildlife.
17 bat species call the Nantahala Pisgah Forest area their home, while 4 are endangered. Prater suggests that individuals could go as far as installing a bat box on trees in a south-facing area. This can assist in enhancing and providing additional habitat for bats, supporting their resilience against various threats. For North Carolina News Service, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
Indigenous groups in Guatemala have led an unprecedented national strike for nearly 3 weeks now to support the president-elect. Neither side seems to be budging in the election battle. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Guatemala, an unprecedented national strike led by indigenous groups has been going on for more than 20 days. Protests and blockades continued over the weekend as indigenous and other citizens mobilized in support of the president-elect. Maria Martin reports.
As Guatemala's national strike enters its third week, neither the government nor pro-democracy protesters are budging. Those mobilizing want the government to drop its efforts to block the reformist president-elect Bernardo Arevalo from taking office, while the government wants the protest to stop, calling the blockades, quote, crimes against humanity. In Guatemala City, doctors from the two largest public hospitals joined the protests. One carried a sign referencing the lack of investment in public health, saying, "We're here for all those who've lost their lives due to corruption." Meanwhile, the indigenous group 48 Cantones, 48 Villages, says some of its blockades will be lifted, but that protests will continue in the capital. The group's significant role in leading the pro-democracy movement is now being celebrated in a song going viral on social media. 48 Cantones, de un pueblo aguerrido y valiente. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking on the official end of the electoral period. At the end of this month, the Justice Department can legally move to disqualify the president-elect's party. For National Native News, I'm Maria Martin.
A northern Wisconsin tribe is in the middle of a major housing development project. In the next year, it's expected to build and renovate 44 homes within the Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Reservation. WXPR's Katie Thorson reports.
Two major housing projects are underway in Lac du Flambeau right now. The Chippewa Housing Authority received $15 million in tax credits to build 20 new homes and renovate 24 others. The new homes will range from 2 to 4 bedroom units. The renovated houses will be adding another bedroom and bathroom. Travoy has been working with the Housing Authority since 2021 to secure the financing. Brian Schuler is the organization's vice president of housing development, who works with tribes across the country.
We see a lot of overcrowding within reservation housing. So that was meeting that particular need in terms of those renovations. Additionally, housing authorities maintain a really large waiting list of households that need housing. And the new construction was going to be very vital to LDS community.
Schuler says the Indian Housing Block Grant allocation hasn't kept up with inflation, which is why tribes like Lac des Flambeaux have turned to the Low Income Housing Tax Credit Program. It's the first time in state history a tribe was able to get both of these types of tax credit projects funded within the same year. Jeff Ackley is the housing administrator for the Lac des Flambeaux Chippewa Housing Authority.
There's always a way to improve anything that you're, you know, any community that you're working in and that kind of thing. So some of it has been challenging, but the reward is great. And, you know, I think that the whole community and, you know, like, Wisconsin wins basically, you know, based for, you know, affording us the opportunity and putting in for tax credit projects.
Ackley says one of the long-term benefits is sustaining tribal membership in the community. People will not have to move off the reservation to find other housing. I'm Katie Thorson reporting.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
It is Tuesday, which means it's time for the Global Citizen Commentary from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. This week, he finds signs of America's political decline everywhere. Advocacy of violence has become the Republicans' trademark, yet the public supports liberal programs. He says galvanizing that support is essential if the U.S. is to remain a democracy. By the way, the opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Peter Baker, the outstanding New York Times columnist, writes, quote, "There was a time not long ago when the United States presumed to teach the world how it was done, when it held itself up as a model of a stable, predictable democracy, when it sent idealistic young avatars to distant parts of the world to impart the American way. These days, to many watching at home and abroad, the American way no longer seems to offer a case study in effective representative democracy. Instead, it has become an example of disarray and discord, one that rewards extremism, challenges norms, and threatens to divide a polarized country even further." Unquote. It's hard to contradict that assessment. Everywhere you look, there are signs of America's political decline, and at every level of government. At the national level, we see the chaos in the Republican Party and its transformation into a Trump cult, the consequent dysfunction of the House of Representatives, the Trumpian assault on the Constitution. The United States as a democratic system is up for a vote next year. At lower levels of government, we have everything from book bans and anti-vax movements to violence against election workers and mindless populist gatherings, often in small towns, against virtually anything that government promotes. And then there's the Supreme Court, once a hallowed institution and now riddled with corruption, its originalist decision-making run amok. It's almost unimaginable that next year the American public, surely one of the world's most exposed to information, might elect a criminal as president. Here is a man twice impeached, indicted an unimaginable number of times, an outright fraud, an admirer of Vladimir Putin and other dictators, a consistent loser in elections and the courts since 2016, and yet, as he stands in the dock for his crimes and offers the American public nothing more than rantings about witch hunts, is again the lead candidate of the Republican Party. Advocacy of violence against anyone who opposes him lies behind those rants. David Remnick compares Trump to Rodrigo Duterte, the former Philippines leader whose anti-drug crusade may have killed as many as 10,000 people. Quote, "Trump has made it plain that his plans for a second term are no less unbelievable than Duterte's, no less vengeful or unhinged. We should listen. These are campaign promises. For many years, Trump has hidden in plain sight. He makes no effort to conceal his bigotries, his lawlessness, his will to authoritarian power. To the contrary, he advertises it, and most disturbing of all, this deepens his appeal." Unquote. As Trump has said, "I need one more indictment to ensure my election." Strangely, although the American people prefer candidates other than Trump and Joe Biden, and lack confidence in just about any institution other than the military, they do support policies and programs that favor liberal government. By substantial margins, the public supports reproductive rights, strong action on climate change, same-sex marriage and transgender rights, protection of Social Security and Medicare, and, contrary to most media reports, aid to Ukraine. In short, despite the best efforts of Republicans to limit big government, the public clearly favors an activist federal government. The Biden administration has delivered on most of the issues the public supports, with economic benefits to red areas as well as blue. To be sure, inflation and immigration plague his administration, and Biden's age keeps coming up. But as David Brooks reminds us, Joe Biden has a pretty good moral compass. His intellect is still sharp, and even his low numbers in polls are better than those of other Democratic leaders around the world. If logic guides politics, the Democrats should win in a landslide next fall, because at this moment we only have one functioning political party. As the columnist Charles M. Blow writes, quote, "All the inflamed consternation about Joe Biden's age and Hunter Biden's legal troubles will, in the end, have to be weighed against something far more consequential. Republicans, obsessed with blind obeisance, a lust for vengeance, and a contempt for accountability, who no longer have the desire or capacity to actually lead," unquote. But logic and politics don't mesh these days. Trump's incoherent speeches and embarrassing behavior get far more media attention than Biden's calmness and accomplishments. Dysfunction at home has consequences abroad. Perceiving the U.S. as a great power in precipitous decline can be dangerous. As the former Defense Secretary Robert Gates has recently written, dysfunction has made American power erratic and unreliable, practically inviting risk-prone autocrats to place dangerous bets with potentially catastrophic effects. In the not-so-distant past, we worried about America's economic decline. First it was the Japanese who were in the ascendancy, then the Chinese, who were said to be number one. Now the U.S. economy is doing better than most others, but the underlying political structure is tottering. We need a great awakening. There is a silent majority that needs to be heard, one that denounces authoritarianism and violence, supports the rule of law and the Constitution, demands accountability, and defends human rights, civil liberties, the environment, and world peace. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks very much for listening.
Listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 24th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Please call us or text us with your breaking news stories, tips, and ideas at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertoff, Sam Bowman, and Jasmine Moneymaker. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Farah Siddiqui, Alex Gonzalez, Mike Moen, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola. By the way, all of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. We simply cannot make this happen without you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, please go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Totality of Circumstances with Sam Bowman and Jasmine Moneymaker. Have a great night and stay dry.
Thank you for listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is Totality of Circumstances. We are actually playing a rerun of our last month's show this month, which focuses on the reaction of the Portland City Council to the proposal by the Police Accountability Commission for a new oversight system for Portland police in the city. Thankfully, due to the City Council's inaction since the meeting that's covered in this show, it's still pretty much basically up to date. They are due to send their own recommendations, the city council is, to the US DOJ on October 31st. And so we will be following up next week with any news about that. So for now, please enjoy again the September show of Totality of Circumstances, and we will be back on the 4th Tuesday of November with more. Thank you for listening to the KBOO Evening News. I'm Sam Bowman. This is Totality of Circumstances, a monthly show covering police oversight in Portland. My co-host Jasmine is out of town as of this recording, but for the past couple years we've been following the progress of the Police Accountability Commission as it created a new police accountability system for the city. This progress involved extensive research, holding hearings with politicians, community groups, police, and the general public, creating lengthy documents and reports, and ultimately presenting a suite of city code changes to City Council on Thursday, September 21st. This is a major milestone in the process of creating the new system, which Portlanders voted for overwhelmingly in 2020. Many members of the City Council have questioned whether or not the will of Portland voters has changed, however, whether they really want so much money and energy spent on police accountability. So, it's worth reminding ourselves how the accountability system came up for a vote in the first place. Beginning in late May of 2020, Portland saw months of ongoing protests against racism and police brutality stemming from the murder of George Floyd, often featuring violent responses from the Portland Police Bureau and other state, local, and federal law enforcement agencies. Myriad accountability issues came out of the protests, from the use and effects of police chemical munitions, to riot cops not wearing visible name badges, to countless individual acts of assault and aggression, many of which have been or continue to be the subject of litigation and formal complaints. In July, the